Ai, cadê você?
Going to wait one more minute to 10:05 my time or 12:05 Eastern. and then we can get started. Let's see, people are starting to join. If you're not talking, I'd please ask just to go on mute. If you have a question, unmute yourself. Thank you. All right. So it's 5 minutes past. I'm going to go ahead and start introducing today's presenter and presentation. So today we have Rebecca Aspler from Unbound Tech. Unbound Tech is a multi-party computation security company. Rebecca will highlight the Unbound Tech's unique wallet type that actually can be used in Hyperledger Fabric. If you go to the Hyperledger website and around wallets, the wallet is actually used to secure and store the identities within Hyperledger Fabric. And Rebecca will be able to go in more detail about that, but that's just a general idea. So I'm going to go ahead and now pass this on to Rebecca. And Rebecca, thanks for joining and being willing to present. So the stage is yours. I'm going to go ahead and stop presenting and share when you're ready.
Thank you, Marco, for the introduction. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join today's call. An absolute pleasure to be with you on this call. I don't know if you see the screen, my screen.
Yeah, we see it.
Okay. So we're going to dive in today's call, I would say, into the infrastructure of how one would want to secure your Hyperledger, your supply chain apps. I do apologize, by the way, for the background noises. It's an evening time where I'm at, so there's a background of teenagers. I do apologize for that. It's a home time. So I'm with you. So we're going to start with securing Hyperledger supply chain apps. I'm going to dive into why would one want to secure it, what are the vulnerabilities, what are the alternatives today. Honestly, I'm an Unbound person, so naturally I would be promoting today the Unbound solution, but I think it's a good overview, generally speaking. So regardless of Unbound, how does Hyperledger protect your transactions? So the regular transaction flow is such that an app requests or initiates a transaction, builds a transaction, and now the various peers that are taking part in a channel must approve it. For them to be able to approve something, they must be part of a channel and they must be authenticated, i.e. identified by the infrastructure, if one could say so. This identification is done using a signature. The signature is being initiated or being, I would say, authorized by a certificate authority. Within Hyperledger Fabric, there's a central certificate authority per, of course, each implementation. Naturally, for each customer, there's part of the infrastructure and implemented certificate authority that is issuing a certificate per principal or per peer that is taking part in the transaction, I would say game, if one could call it this way. And the authorization or the authentication of those various peers is done using PKI, public key infrastructure, meaning it's pretty much like a lock and a key where one would have their own private key that can approve or identify only that specific peer within a channel. And the public key, which is transparent to everyone involved, can identify that specific peer within the authentication process. In the process itself, the peer will request a certificate from the certificate authority, and the certificate authority will issue a certificate with which that peer can actually authenticate through the transaction approval, as you can see this V sign. Now, the certificate authority is a major part of the Hyperledger Fabric, I would say, infrastructure within each and every implementation this element exists and is issuing certificates, revoking certificates, and without it, actually, the entire infrastructure is vulnerable to, I would say, fraudulent peers, which is prevented using this certificate authority, which naturally has to be very much secured. Now, how would one secure those keys, those private keys? And please do stop me if you have any questions. So today, there are actually several wallet types within Hyperledger Fabric, or actually within Hyperledger, I would say, infrastructure in general. You could store those keys, those certificate keys, those authentication keys, or even the signing keys of a transaction, because there are various types of keys in various types of wallets, as Hyperledger calls it. It could be a simple file. It could be the memory within a server. It could be an HSM and hardware security module, which is considered to be a very safe type of infrastructure. And of course, it could be on a database as well. So these are the four known ones. And if you would look into Hyperledger documentation, you would mostly see, I would say, mentioning of these four types.
What does HSM stand for again? I'm sorry, just to, for folks in the call, just to understand the acronyms representation, HSM, what does that stand for?
Hardware Security Module. It is a hardware server, and it was built initially, I would say, about 20 or even 30 years ago. It is considered the most safe as any hardware, pretty much like a safe in a bank. It would hold, in our example, keys, private keys. It would protect them. It is tamper-proof, so if one touches it, tries to move it, tries to even, you know, reach out to it physically, it would sort of shout out if you're trying to do something. It would even, in very much like James Bond kind of films, it would destroy itself upon any type of tampering. So it's really cool to see those devices, but then again, in Unbound point of view, they're very much outdated, meaning it's kind of an old kind of 1990s kind of game, but this is me just saying that. Honestly, it's a matter of a perception. I do want to be sure that if there was an HSM person on the call, he would naturally position it differently.
Understood. Thank you.
But yes, I'm just trying to be as objective as I can be with still Unbound logo on the slides. But then again, it is worth saying that today is in almost 2020 to start. There are actually five types of wallets. So as you saw, there are the four that we've mentioned, but there is also what we call a VHSM, meaning a virtual HSM, which is pure software. And in Unbound case, it uses MPC, multi-party computation. Multi-party computation is a field that exists for 30 years now, for 30 years. And this is actually really interesting regardless of any wallet type. I think it's a cool kind of discussion to have regardless of any type of security module. It's an academic field of mathematicians, like geek, real geek mathematicians that have been going on for about 30 years. We're very much privileged to have Professor Nigel Smart and Professor Yuda Lindell as the co-founders of the company and involved on a day-to-day basis within the company. Yuda Lindell is our CEO. This mathematical field has been, I would say, in theory, as being able to protect secrets that could be shared between several parties. Just as an example, different hospitals sharing data between them on illnesses and medical, I would say, records, but without revealing, I would say, the private data of the various patients. Or people's paying for lunch. This is a very simple kind of example. Having the highest paid person in the table, around the table, paying for lunch, but without revealing the actual paycheck of each of the lunch attendees. or Google having or universities sharing data between them on students, but without revealing the students' identities, as an example. So there are various, I would say, theoretical implementations of MPC. But about 5 years ago, there was a technical breakthrough or mathematical breakthrough where instead of having or being able to compute functions in minutes time, let's say 9 minutes, it dropped into milliseconds. And it actually therefore opened the door to having it in practical uses, meaning being able to share those keys that we've talked about, for example, authentication keys between servers, or between servers or a server and several endpoints, either one or more. So now you can start actually imagining a situation, if we go back, where you could have that key. Remember, we talked about that private key, but not as a full entity, which could be stolen, which could be watched and even be used. For example, we don't have to steal a password. We can, like a physical key, we can simply see it and then use it to steal the assets, the money, or medical records, or supply chain records, whatever it is. So being able to distribute the key into N shares actually opened up the door to a whole different type of implementation, where one could have, as an example, authentication keys being spread, distributed between servers and endpoints. The cool stuff is that the key never ever exists, not at generation and not in use. This is really, I would say, counterintuitive. I'm not a mathematician, I'm an engineer, so I cannot go into the details of that. But honestly, this is where I would say to my kids, this is why you need to learn mathematics. At the end of the day, what lies, I would say, in the foundation of every password that we're using, every secret, every PIN code, is mathematics.
So it's zero knowledge proof is the technology.
Yes.
Okay, so you had mentioned, you had mentioned that it went from 9 minutes to like milliseconds. It's my understanding,
yes,
correct me if I'm wrong, but zero knowledge proof has a lot of, demands a lot of the CPU. It requires a lot of processing power, from what I hear. Are you saying that you have a unique approach or technology that can actually reduce the time significantly?
Exactly. So we're doing it depending on the number of transactions per second on their infrastructure, but it goes from, I would say, 30 milliseconds to 80, at the most to 300, just as an example.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So diving a bit into more the technology, because I think it's worthwhile, and then I'll go into the practical implementation. So it is important to understand that the key never existed. It's actually being shared, in this example, between two servers. So there's a secure boundary between those two servers, and the organization, let's say a customer of ours, has full control over the key, but the key is distributed between at least two servers. And for example, one server could be at the, let's say, AWS, and the other one at Azure. One could be at the customer side, one could be at the customer side, et cetera, et cetera. So there are various implementations. I will skip this slide for now. I think this is where it becomes more interesting to supply chain. And then we'll see an actual example of a customer of us, because it doesn't have to be a server to server. It could also be a server to N endpoints. And in this example, you see five, I would say, participants. We call them participants because none of them is an actual user that can approve a transaction. They actually take part in approving a transaction. So if you could imagine a supply chain, I would say, cycle or a journey where you would have, let's say, even five hands going through a package or whatever it is, an entity that you need to get from point A to point B. And now you can have those in two groups, in N groups, and you could have each of those parties actually approve or authenticate itself through the server to say, hey, I'm this person or I'm this machine, and I'm approving, I'm identifying myself, and I'm approving this transaction as an acceptable or declining it as a non-acceptable type of transaction. And the unique thing about this is that the key never exists as one entity, never, not at generation, not at usage. Also interesting to mention, because when the assets become, I would say, more sensitive, is that the key shares are being refreshed in a continuous manner, or I don't know if the word continuous is the right one, on a periodically type of manner. Could be seconds, could be minutes, could be days. It is up for you to decide. So this is, I think, an interesting implementation of what does it mean to have the key distributed between various members of the channel. Interestingly, this is pure software, so it has the advantage of not having to ship HSMs, because these are physical servers, as mentioned. If you have bugs or new algorithms, you don't have to ship or upgrade the firmware, which is very or very not cost effective or very expensive type of process. We're asset agnostic. We sign today financial type of assets. We sign medical assets. We sign supply chain assets. So it doesn't matter. The key can sign everything. The solution is crypto agile, which is very important in the world where digital assets are being involved or evolving on a day-to-day basis. Deterministic wallets are, I would say, less relevant for the supply chain world, but this is the ability to generate a new address, a new like destination address for each and every type of transaction. So the anonymity grows as you go along. You cannot trace back the exact customer. This is most, I would say, relevant for highly sensitive type of assets or transactions. We talked about the multi-party approval, which is a very, I would say, unique capability. Should be stressed out that these are not application security rules, which are very easily broken security-wise if a hacker is very much insisting on breaking those. These are cryptographically proofed quorums where the key is being shared between various parties. And I think that the most important thing are the risk-based policies, where you could define that you have, just as an example, only two bots for low-risk type of supply chain assets or transactions, but having even the CEO and the CFO and the COO, just as an example, sign together when these are higher-risk type of transactions. Now, an actual case study, which is live in production, I cannot disclose the customer name, but looking, I would say, at the image, one could easily guess what type of customer it is. So with one of our customers, they're actually moving packages all around, I would say, the continent, or at least through dozens of states. And each of the approvers, naturally, if we take a package as an example, each package goes through N points, where each point has to sign not only the arrival of the package, but properties of the package itself, meaning a timestamp, depending on the type of package, it could be the temperature, the sender, the approver, the all types of properties that are related to that specific package entity. Now, each of these signing actions is being controlled by a key, if you remember where we started the presentation. So previously, before using Unbound, this company or this customer, and this is an architecture slide, but we don't need to go into each and every, I would say, box of it, but initially, part of the infrastructure was to use an HSM, a wallet of an HSM. So it created a very expensive type of architecture and a very, I would say, risky type of architecture with where one would have to replace an HSM or have HSMs distributed and have limitations on the number of keys that such an HSM can manage. You can imagine how I would say distributed of an operation is, where you have a key per signer, just as an example. So HSMs that can manage up to 500,000 keys may seem like a lot of keys, but these are enterprise security oriented infrastructures. And once you go out to supply chain type of implementations, this is very, I would say, limited. With Walmart, just as an example, it would be an ineffective type of infrastructure. Nike, that has thousands of stores only in the USA, it would be a non-applicable type of infrastructure. And also with these customers, so they have been looking for an alternative to the physical HSM. And with Unbound, they use, regardless of the specific architecture, they replace the HSM, the physical HSM, with a software VHSM, which has the keys distributed between two servers. So if we go back to this, I would say, slide, instead of using this type of wallet, they decided to use this type of wallet. And now the key in their case is actually non-existent as one entity, but actually being distributed between two servers, having at least two shares of each key for each of the signers that is taking part in the signing process.
So I have a question. Does the key have to go through the same process of consensus? Meaning that every participant has to calculate or generate that key in the same way as the as everyone else?
Well, yes, but the key itself is being generated through Unbound servers. But yes, the consensus is still the same. Yes.
And you say Unbound server, so is that in like a general Hyperledger fabric, for example, network, is that a node? Is that something like an Oracle, if you will, like a third party service that you host and that we'd have to connect to? How does that look like?
Yeah, so actually, if we drill down a bit into the details, so we're using a simple, generic, nothing unique PKCS11 type of protocol to reach the HSM. So it would be simply replacing the wallet type within, if I were to Google now and find a regular type of implementation of Hyperledger Fabric, you would most usually with enterprises, supply chain enterprises, see there a box of an HSM and a PKCS11 type of protocol running from the certificate authority onto that HSM storing the keys. So instead of an HSM, there would be an Unbound VHSM, just as an example.
And would that be hosted locally, part of the network, or is that, I just want to confirm that.
So it is really up to the customer. It could be we're not a SaaS provider. We're not a service provider. But it would be up to the customer to decide where do they put those servers. Our recommendation would be to segregate those servers to increase the level of security. So having those two servers in, just as an example, an extreme example, in one room, it is more secure than having an HSM in that room. But then again, if you could have one server at, I would say, Azure and one server in AWS of the customer, would add another layer of security.
Thank you.
Thank you. If I would just summarize, if that's okay with you. So I think that mainly if one could take something out of this presentation is actually two points, regardless of Unbound, your infrastructure is secure as your wallet is. So if you're, just as an example, if we drop the HSM aside, if you're storing your keys in a file system or in memory, they're very vulnerable. So if you're managing a risky type of asset, it's a non-issue. I mean, we've all lost, you know, assets in our lives, and sometimes we don't really care. We sort of go, okay, so I'll buy it again or whatever it is. But if the asset is a very sensitive one or a very risky one or a very expensive one, please do not store your keys. Look at the architecture slide, ask the CISO. Do not store the keys in memory. Do not store them in a file or do not store them in a database. Even if the database is encrypted, but the keys are protected in a single place, because it really calls for a hacker to go in and simply take the data out of your system. If you are considering an HSM, you may want to think of the alternative out there today, which is a multi-party based type of VHSM. Questions?
So is that it? So we can open questions to the rest of the group, or do you have more to present?
No, I'm okay with taking questions. I'd love for a discussion to...
Sure. So yeah, if anybody has a question, please unmute yourself and go ahead and feel free to ask.
So is this a commercial venture, I imagine? And how does your pricing and all that work? Or is it open source?
So we do have an open source because we do want to spread out the MPC word into the world. So a two-party kind of open source is out there in GitHub. I can later on spread it through Marco. It's a low-level MPC library. So it is out there for the public to use. Whenever one would want to use a multi-party type of multi-party computation protocol, it is, of course, part of the platform itself. We sell it through a license, and depending on the business model of the customer, if the customer is willing to share revenue and therefore lower the license, we're very much open to that. But there is an open source out there.
Thanks.
Great, thank you. Anybody else?
I have another one. So a question around integration with Fabric. How easy, difficult? I mean, sort of just at a high level, how does that work?
So we have customers that are working with Hyperledger Fabric, actually already a few of them, a dozen of them. So a simple PKCS 11 kind of interface, nothing special about it, honestly.
I have a question, and this is something that I'm not sure if it relates or not, but just in terms of identity, where do you see like the greatest challenges right now, and what do we have to overcome in the blockchain distributed ledger technology to really get to a point of mass adoption?
I've been thinking about this for quite some time, and even earlier we finished the call with KPMG. It really is, I would say, what we see as Unbound, because we're a security platform and therefore working with different types of verticals and different type of markets. We're working in Asia and the United States and EMEA. We have customers in Germany and Switzerland, etc. And all type of fields. We have financial services type of customers, we have exchanges and banks, we have supply chain customers, we have identity type of customers. And from our perspective as identity, I would say protectors, we're pretty much challenged by the market, I would say, lack of understanding of how important it is to protect the keys, the authentication keys, the identity keys. People very much tend to go to the traditional solutions simply because this is how things have been done up until now, without examining the infrastructure or the, I would say, ways of these devices or solutions, how well do they fit the current or the future needs. So this is, I would say, something we're struggling with. This is from my perspective as an enterprise security type of person. For me as a person, I would love for blockchain to be revolutionizing, I would say, identity, for me to not go around with various passwords to various, I would say, institutions, etc.
Great, thank you. Does anybody else have a question? I have another question if nobody else has a question. But I want to give somebody else the opportunity, so go ahead if you have a question.
I'd be interested.
Want to make a comment. Go ahead.
Feedback, whatever.
I want to make a comment, you know, because we've been doing POCs using Unbound. So for Fabric, I think you have to use the identity mixer, which is, you know, you have to use the Java-based identity mixer in order to integrate with Unbound. That is how we got to do it. But we have been using it independently. Instead of the Fabric CA, we have experimented using Unbound as a, not only for generating the keys, but also signing the messages, and also storing the keys.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Thank you for this comment.
So, question around use cases, supply chain specifically. Do you have any case studies documented or what have you in this space?
Well, this is a challenge. You know, being an enterprise security type of company, most of our customers are not willing to share their names. This is always a challenge with a security type of company. We have several use cases. I'm so sorry I cannot detail them in a public manner. And since these are large customers, if I give the details, you'd understand quite easily who they are. So, yeah.
What about in cases with IoT? Have you had experience with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these are really cool. Again, I cannot mention the names, but this is easier, I would say, because these are very generic ones. Smart home. This is really cool case. I think it would actually dominate our future. So we have a very large customer where they're implementing the MPC, the multi-party computation, in a manner where there's a server in the house, just as an example. And you can turn on and off different devices within the house in a secure manner. Let's say the air conditioner, the TV, whatever it is that you want to control, even the door lock to be able to open the door. So you reach, this is a really cool example. You reach the door, you don't have a key anymore. You use your phone pretty much like a hardware token. So when you reach the door, you identify yourself with your mobile device where there's an SDK on the app of the customer app. So the server, like a server, it's like a client-to-client kind of authentication where instead of the lock, you have a server within the door. On the device of the door, there's also a software, and you're using the mobile device to be able to open the door. So now you can imagine a situation where a family can see on the app exactly who opened the door at which time, because you can identify who authenticated, right? If it's my boy, if it's my girl, if it's my husband, you can see exactly the timestamp, and you don't need to go around with a key. a physical key, just as an example.
Okay. Anybody have any questions? Or go ahead, Rebecca, if you had something to add.
No, I'm just sort of thinking of more use cases to think about, to maybe share, but I don't know if you can spare the time, like with cars, the automated, like a Tesla car was stolen about 2 years ago. So Tesla is not a customer. So just to be on the safe side, as far as Tesla is not a customer, but one could imagine a situation where, I don't know if you know of relay attacks, where one would come near your window, your house window, and actually relay the code of the key with which you opened the car, and therefore simply steal your car. So using unbound MPC, now you could have your mobile device's actual key, sort of virtual key to open the car, and it would communicate with a server. There are so many servers on the car itself, an ECU, it's called. There are various types of them in a car. So it could be the mobile device of the car owner and their, let's say, life or business partner, whatever it is, to open the car. Now, this may seem like a non-issue just for opening the car or turning it on, but also this is really important when one would want to avoid a situation where one would take control over a car while this person is driving, which is a much more, I would say, risky type of situation. So there is another use case in the automotive industry.
So in, when it comes to, like, you know, you hear a lot now of IoT devices like the home about hacking, you know, how does this help prevent it? And what is really like the, what is the strong feature that really would prevent a hack from, or one of the use cases for that hackers use to take control of IoT devices or any device for that matter?
So hackers, it could be devices and it could be any type of asset, a financial transaction, a medical type of transaction. Hackers almost always find a way to get into the key, that private key that is actually allowing one to approve a transaction, to authenticate as the person owning that information or that device or whatever asset it is. So even yesterday, there was a publication of hackers being able to take advantage of the voltage of SGX enclaves within servers. This is really cool. I mean, as far as being a smart, I would say, criminal, being able to exploit voltage type of incidents within a server to be able to hack a private key out of the device. So with MPC, regardless of unbound, I just want to be sort of regardless of unbound, even though unbound is an expert, et cetera, et cetera. But MPC is honestly the future of cryptographic, I would say, management of secrets, because when the key is not there, there's nothing to steal. So it could be, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I didn't mean to interrupt. Please continue your thought.
No.
Okay.
No, that's so, yeah, so that's it.
So what about, like, you know, I think many people are indirectly exposed to, for example, when you go to a website and, you know, you have the HTTPS, you have to have a certificate for that. Do you see any application here when it comes to, you know, DNS and also, you know, domains to be authenticated and so forth?
Yeah, so we have a partner where we help protect the keys that are being responsible for the generation of those certificates. So not so much for the websites that we're all, you know, browsing through, like shopping or whatever it is, but with this is a public name that I can mention. With IBM, every piece of code, actually, that IBM, I don't know if every, this is a harsh, I would say, statement, but many code applications that they're publishing these days are actually signed by Unbound. So for them to be able to sign their code with an MPC-based key, meaning a distributed key, meaning they're very much certain that their applications are secure and cannot be hacked. Now, with IBM being an enterprise software type of, I would say, company, you could think of it as their prestige and their brand name. But can you think of a device within an operation room or within an airplane that is not securely signed? And a hacker wants to get into that, or drones that are flying all over and are not secure enough and can do whatever they'd like, you know, take pictures or videos or come down, you know, at a certain point in the military service, etc. So the more, I would say, online we become, the more secure we need to be. And MPC, regardless of unbound, is probably the next, I would say, era in secrets protection.
Great, thank you. I just want to let us all know we have about 15 minutes left. More like 10 minutes, so go ahead and continue with questions.
So question around, very interesting topic. I have to say it's all new to me, so very interesting. If I want to learn more, what would you recommend?
So there's, of course, the Unbound website where there's a blogs area or blog posts where one could read so much about the technology itself or its comparison compared to other type of wallets in the Hyperledger Fabric type of jargon. There are many YouTube clips that one could look at. When I joined Unbound, I simply looked at YouTube, listening to Professor Lindell lectures that are shared on YouTube. That's it.
So yeah, for Rebecca, like you had mentioned earlier, you know, if you can provide, you know, the actual open source version and
yes,
any additional information, I can certainly make sure that gets in the hands of the rest of the group here.
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Well, Rebecca, that was great. You know, being that we don't have any other questions, I don't want to hold other folks up or yourself. That was a great presentation. Thanks again. Looking forward to more information, and perhaps we can follow up sometime next year to see where what has changed and where this is headed, if you have any new information. So thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join this call today.
Thanks, everyone. And I'll send out an email for our next presentation too. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.